Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on Thursday, the 12th of January, the year 2012. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll talk to Karen Vandegan and Renee Wallace from Alaska Legal Services about Monday's day of service. Ishmael Hope, Kathy Reddy, and Peter Metcalf will be here to let us know about this spring's land conference in Sitka. We'll also find out about Monday's celebration of Martin Luther King Jr. with our guest, Sherry Patterson. We'll hear a little bit from the Mudroom's presentation last night with storyteller Tom Cosgrove. That Writer's Almanac music and more today on a Juneau afternoon. A strong wind expected through this afternoon. Forecast for tonight, rain and showers and snow showers, with accumulation of up to 2 inches expected. Snow showers diminishing tomorrow afternoon.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. This week, the Federal Court of Appeals reinstated a claim filed by the Wind River Tribes against the federal government, which accuses the Department of Interior of mismanaging mineral royalties. Wyoming Public Radio's Tristan Autone reports.
The Shoshone and Arapaho claims were initially filed in 1979. Since then, most have been adjudicated and settled. However, one big piece remains: oil and gas leases initially established in the early 1900s. Allegedly, the Department of Interior managed those leases, then illegally transformed them into new leases in the 1930s, and the tribes argue that because the department failed to follow its own rules, the leases are void, and the tribes are owed money for them. However, the federal court argues that the tribes brought the claim too late, and that they can only collect damages from 6 years prior to the original suit filed in 1979. If the federal government decides to not fight the case, the tribes could collect nearly 30 years' worth of damages. However, the more likely scenario is that the case will end up in front of the Supreme Court so that the government can try to avoid paying such a huge sum of money. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
The Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma is getting a new top lawyer. As KGOU's Kurt Gortney reports, the tribe's recently elected chief is appointing a new attorney general.
Cherokee Nation Principal Chief Bill John Baker said he will nominate lawyer Todd Hembry to lead the tribe's legal arm. Baker said Hembry has a wealth of Indian law experience. Hembry's from eastern Oklahoma, where he graduated from Stillwell High School. He's a graduate of Northeastern State University in Tahlequah, Oklahoma, in the heart of the Cherokee Nation. He received his law degree from Notre Dame Law School. Hembry has represented the tribal council since 1999. He says he now looks forward to representing the Cherokee Nation as a whole, enforcing its laws and defending its sovereignty. If confirmed by a tribal committee, his appointment will go before the full council in February. Hembry would succeed current Attorney General A. Diane Hammonds, whose term expired in 2011. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney.
A 10-year effort to build an off-reservation tribal casino along Oregon's Columbia River has been stalled by delays with the federal government. Now some city officials are considering other options for the property. As KWSO's William Robbins reports, tribal officials still hope to build the casino.
An article that appeared in the Hood River News regarding the Warm Springs tribe's efforts to build the Bridge of the Gods casino in the Columbia River Gorge cast a shadow of doubt over the project. And while it appears that Cascade Locks officials have run out of patience and are looking to do something else with the property, tribal officials maintain the project is still very much alive and well and moving forward. Louis Pitt Jr. is the governmental affairs and planning director for the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. He was quoted in the Hood River News saying that the tribes are willing to be patient to get their goal.
You know, it's our dream to always return to our homelands, which is on the big river, and economic sovereignty is very much still a part of who we are.
During a public comment period held last week in Cascade Locks, reaction was mixed. Numerous speakers felt the port was turning their back on the tribes and treating a valued business partner unfairly. In Warm Springs, Oregon, I'm William Robbins.
A bison relocation plan in Montana is challenged in court. According to the Associated Press, opponents filed a lawsuit Wednesday seeking to stop the relocation of 68 wild bison to the Fort Peck and Fort Belknap reservations. The proposal was approved in December. Property owners and ranchers are among the plaintiffs. They claim bison cause property damage and carry disease. Wildlife officials have managed the bison in quarantine for more than 5 years. The tribes, which have commercial herds, have pledged to take responsibility of the wild animals. On this day in 1923, Ira Hayes was born in Arizona. The Native American became famous after he helped raise the U.S. flag on Iwo Jima during World War II. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PIC, CLIC, GIVE when filing online for your PFD. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guests are here to talk about Martin Luther King Jr.'s Day of Service going on this Monday at the Diamond Courthouse. Karen Godnick from Alaska Legal Services and Renee Wallace from the Juneau Bar Association. Thank you for coming down to the station today.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So this is a free legal clinic going on next Monday. Can you describe it, please?
Sure. This is the third year we've had it. It's a conjunction, or it's a project that's hosted by Alaska Legal Services, the Alaska Bar Association, and the Juneau Bar Association, in honor of the Martin Luther King Jr. federal holiday, which has been designated as a day of service. So we provide a free legal clinic. Anyone can come to the Diamond Courthouse between 11 and 7, and there'll be a group of attorneys there who can offer advice on a variety of civil matters, so, you know, landlord-tenant, family law, public benefits, small claims, anything like that will be there to answer your questions.
What are some of the common questions asked?
We get a lot of family law issues, divorce, child custody. Public benefits are also something that people ask a lot of. So, and it kind of, it depends. You know, it varies from year to year.
How should people prepare?
If there's a contract or a notice or something they've gotten in the mail or that they have questions about, they should bring it with them. Any sort of document they think that may be useful for us to look at would be helpful for them to bring. But other than that, we're going to have lots of food throughout the day, so they should come hungry. We'll also have some volunteers on site who can help with kids. If you need to bring your kids, we'll have a coloring station set up for that as well.
But how long are you people expected to stay at each visit?
It depends. Generally, there are 15 to 20 minute spots, but if we have a lull and you have a longer question, we can take the time to answer it. So it depends kind of how many people are coming in and out and who we need to get in.
So this is happening in several locations throughout Alaska?
Yes, it's happening in 4 locations throughout the state, in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and for the first time this year in Sitka as well. And in the past 2 years, we've helped over 600 Alaskans on Martin Luther King Day. So we encourage everyone to come out, and we're looking forward to helping people.
If people need transportation, I understand you've arranged for transportation.
Yes, they can call Alaska Legal Services at 586-6425 to arrange transportation. Or we're also going to have bus tokens available, so if you can get a ride there, we can provide you with a bus token to get home.
And this is an all-volunteer effort?
It is. It is an all-volunteer effort. We've got a bunch of attorneys who are willing to spend their day coming in and giving advice, and we also have court staff and other volunteers from around the community who are going to come and help out. So it's a great cause, and we're so thankful that everyone pitches in to help.
Renee, have you done this before?
No, I haven't, but I'm eager to participate as my first time, and it seems like everyone in the community is buzzing about it, so we're looking for a third successful year.
And you've also done it before, Karen, I know.
Yes, this is my third year. I've helped plan it every year, so we hope for it to be the biggest and the best year yet.
What's the feeling that you get after you help these people with their legal questions?
It's a great feeling. You know, you really walk away feeling as though you've made a difference, and people are so thankful, and you feel really good about yourself and about helping the community as a whole. So it's a great feeling.
Once again, we're talking about the Day of Service with Karen Gundick and Renee Wallace from the Alaska Bar Association, the Juneau Bar Association, and Alaska Legal Services. But a free legal clinic going on next Monday from 11 a.m. till 7 p.m. Do you think people need to call in advance to arrange a space?
Nope. People can just show up at any time during those hours, and we can help them.
All right. Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
Not that I can think of. Just please feel free to come.
Hi. I know a man named Otis who invented a roof, and his heart was filled with pride. I said to Mr. Otis, what does your room do? He said it goes from side to side. So I said, Mr. Otis, if you take my advice, you'll be the richest man in town. You gotta take that room that goes from side to side and make it go up and down.
And that was good advice, good advice. Good advice costs nothing and it's worth the price.
I sincerely doubt that the world could do without my good advice. Sir Isaac Newton came around to my house one day. His face was all sunburned and red. He said he didn't want to sleep in the shade of a tree because an apple might fall on his head. I said, Sir Isaac, you dumbbell, take my advice. Go right back there and sleep beneath that tree. And if you let that rotten apple fall down on your head, why, you'll discover gravity.
Good advice, good advice. Good advice costs nothing and it's worth the price.
The world's a better place since I gave the human race my good advice. A man named Mr. Waterman invented a tube. He was sad because it sprung a little leak. He said, darn it, when I hold my tube on a piece of paper, the ink leaks out and makes a little streak. He said, I've got to find a way to stop that leak. I'll start working on my leak-proof tube again. I said, Waterman, you idiot, don't stop that leak. You just invented a fountain pen.
And that was good advice, good advice. Good advice was nothing and it's worth the price.
So worldly wise, I should get the Nobel Prize for good advice. Good old Henry Ford, he was a hard-working man. He worked all night and all day. I said, Henry, what you doing? And Henry, he said, I'm inventing the Chevrolet. He said, I've already built 25 models. One for each letter from A to Z. I said, Henry, you fool, there are 26 letters in the alphabet. He said, good heavens, I forgot the Mazzi.
And that was good advice. Good advice. Good advice for nothing and it's worth the price.
A little less can be and it's absolutely free. My good advice. Wilbur and Orville were two brothers named Wright, the nicest pair of kids you've ever seen. They worked 12 years on a secret project. They thought it was a washing machine. I said, fellas, what are all those wings for? They said, for hanging clothes out to dry. I said, you fools, take that washing machine out to Kitty Hawk and see if the darn thing will fly.
Good advice, good advice, good advice costs nothing and it's worth the price.
I'm so smart that I'm gonna win a Guggenheim for good advice.
Music of Alan Sherman. Time is 3:13 and you are tuned in to KTOO News in Juneau, where my next guests here on a Juneau afternoon, Peter Metcalf and Ishmael Hope, here to talk about the upcoming Klan Conference based in Sitka on March 29th through April 1st, 2012. Peter and Ish, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
First question, what is a Klan Conference?
Well, a Klan Conference is a multidisciplinary forum that is focused around indigenous knowledge, indigenous history, language, culture, and the clans, trying to go into the heart of Tlingit ways of being and thinking. And so it welcomes Native and non-Native scholars and elders, artists, poets, and just people there just who want to get a little bit closer into Indigenous knowledge. It's a chance, I think, to get into really just world-class Indigenous knowledge you know, and there are not many outlets like that nowadays. So I think, you know, that's one of the special opportunities that this Klan conference has. I've been watching all the DVDs of the past two in 2007 and 2009. And in addition to having been there, there's just incredible stuff.
How did they start?
This is Peter Metcalf. I'm the director of communications, so to speak, volunteer position. But Ishmael's father, and late father, Andy Hope, a very good friend of mine, kind of roped me into this back in 1993 and asked me to produce the first video for the first Klan conference that was held in Haines, Tlaquan. And it was this tremendous success. There was hundreds of people showed up, the academically, some of the best people in the world having to do with Tlingit and Northwest indigenous topics, and just some of the really important elders. You know, I can think of a lot of them and they're now passed on. But that's how it got started. And then Andy carried on for another decade or so, and then had several other conferences that I was not involved in. But then in 2006, we came together again on this project, and Steve Hendrickson of the Alaskan Museum and Sergey Kahn, a professor from Dartmouth College back in New Hampshire, is that where it is?
Mm-hmm.
And so, and anyway, we all came together, and Steve Hendrickson had written the grant, got some money from National Science Foundation, and Andy was the executive director, and we put on a first-class show over in Sitka and had about 500 people attend. And so then we subsequently did in 2009 here in Juneau. Now we're back to Sitka in 2012, March 29th through April 1. And part of the reason for scheduling it in Sitka is in honor of the 100th anniversary of the Alaskan Native Brotherhood, some of which we will be discussing the history of the ANB at this conference.
What are the subjects you covered?
What's that?
What are the subjects you covered?
Well, for the Alaska Native Brotherhood, you know, one thing I'm going to be involved in is the historical significance of the organization. It was a you know, very important civil rights organization, not just in Alaska, but it was ahead of the curve nationally. So, but among the other subjects are, and some of these Ish just mentioned, linguistics, Native tradition bearers and elders and fluent speakers will be there to work with linguists and other students of the language. There'll be archaeology, art and music, Alaska Native history, museum studies, cultural anthropology, indigenous law and protocols, fisheries, and traditional ecological knowledge. It's a pretty wide gamut.
And you're looking for more presenters?
Yes, we are. We're soliciting presentation proposals through the 18th, though, to be honest. Sure, we'll continue to accept proposals beyond that date, but we've already gotten quite a few. Maybe Ish could comment on that.
Oh yeah, we've gotten. There's like those. There's we found some in some areas in the subject range of the ANB, of course. You know, Peter and other folks who can present on that language. Trying to revitalize the Tlingit language, really bring it out, and offer traditional knowledge bearers a chance to really speak freely. Speak freely in their own language, and you know, sometimes we have poetry events. It goes from oral to written literature, and I'd also really encourage folks. There are people who can assist and bring and get involved with traditional knowledge bearers, with elderly people who we just love and we want to. We want to hear what they have to say, and if they choose to document their knowledge, it's there. You know, every now and then, you just have that lightning in a bottle where you get that old, ancient, you know, beautiful way of thinking, and it just comes out. And so we're hoping to create that kind of positive, supportive environment, and then hopefully there are people who can bring their traditional people to Sitka. In addition to everyone else, it'd just be great to have a whole wide range of people coming.
Yeah, I want to emphasize, Jeff, that this is not an exclusive event. I mean, one of the things I really enjoy about it is, you know, if you go to a conference with linguists or with anthropologists, you're going to walk into a room, unless you're conversant, it's going to be like walking into a place that they're speaking a foreign language. At this conference, we have some of the world-class experts. They don't dumb it down, but they're speaking plain English, so it's accessible to everybody. And it's really fun to see many of these experts who've been long studying Pacific Northwest cultures to mix it up with the elders and people who are living the culture, and it's an atmosphere of mutual respect. And that's a fairly recent thing. Back a couple of generations ago, there was not a lot of respect, I don't believe, among both the practitioners and the people who were studying it, because there was a certain amount of distrust and perhaps condescension. I think all that's disappeared, and it's really a very collegial atmosphere.
Well, it's like the way, I think, a way for a young person to try to get into knowledge, or anyone who wants to get into the knowledge, is you have our 200 to 300 fluent speakers. They're, in my mind, at the heart of the getting into that worldview. And then you have the people who if, whether they know the language or not, they really practice the culture. But then also a real important part about getting into the knowledge, I think, is going into the documentation and the recordings, the written material. A lot of the people that are organizing this event, they're fantastic writers, and so to create a situation where the people who are at the heart of the culture, practicing the culture, with the people who are studying about the culture, putting them together, it just creates a very, very dynamic environment.
What would you say unifies the participants?
I think the dedication and interest, like on my part, just an interest in the culture in the area where I grew up. You know, it's surprising that more people aren't more deeply interested in it, but it's been reviving in my lifetime in a fantastic way, really. But it, so I think this commitment to the regeneration or the renewal of interest, mostly in a culture that has been here for thousands of years and too much ignored, perhaps in the recent past. I think that's what unifies a lot of us, you know, because we see it as a rich heritage that deserves to be shared.
I think there are traditional ways of how you need to honor the knowledge that's being disseminated. But once you start to learn that, I think it belongs to everybody. I think as a way, I believe that a language is a living thing, as Robert Bringhurst taught me. And so when you go into that language, it just, you know, it just really, I think, affects you and changes your life, and you can't help but wanting to be more interested in it. I think when I was young, my dad would just have me, you know, I'd be fighting with my brother Andy Ford, and then, you know, outside the halls of the A&B, but every now and then I'd see an elder speak and speak in a Tlingit language. I wouldn't have any idea what he's saying, but there'd be something there that just affects you and moves you, even when you're at a young age. And so I think once you get more and more of those things, it just draws you in.
I'm talking to Ish Hope and also Peter Metcalf about the upcoming Klan Conference in Sitka, March 29th through April 1st. Is there a typical attendee, would you say?
Anyone who's interested in culture, really. Yeah, anyone who you want to get closer to the place where you live, closer to this land here, and the knowledge that's been building on this land, feel more comfortable at home in this place, I think. Culture is a big part of that, Native culture.
You know, one of the things I remember most strongly about the 2007 conference in Sitka was Ish's father, Andy, had long talked about a Tlingit college. And so we're standing there in the middle of this conference, and I mean, there's like 500 people there, and they're just, it's a break between workshops, and people are just bustling through the hallway. And Andy and I are standing next to each other, practically having to shout. And I said, Andy, I think I get what you mean about a Tlingit college, because that's what we just were in the middle of. There was, you know, every sort of type of class happening, you know, in linguistics and archaeology and museum studies and all these young people and elders. And it was just a great scene. And Andy said, there's a real hunger for this.
Mm-hmm.
And there was. It was very obvious.
Is there a cost to go to the conference?
There's
yeah.
Is there what?
A cost?
$75 for the 4 days and $25 if you're a senior or a student. And sounds like we're going to have quite a few students. We're coordinating with the Association of Alaska School Boards and Department of Education, and they're getting pretty excited about this. So we're getting the feeling we're going to have a lot of students from grade school through high school, as well as good participation from the University of Alaska.
Let's say somebody wanted to study the previous Klan conferences. Are the DVDs still available to watch?
They are, and probably, you know, we don't have a direct website. We should get this worked out, but it's been hosted by the, it is hosted by the Alaska Native Knowledge Network, ankn.org. And you go onto that site and just search Sharing Our Knowledge. You'll get portals to both the 2009 and 2007 events with the programs and give you a good idea of what we're producing here.
Whenever I travel through Southeast Alaska, I come across in hotel rooms that big map that Andy put together a number of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's kind of the foundation of a lot of things, the Tlingit Country Map. And I think that I was involved in producing that with Andy, and that's as simple as it is, I think it's one of the things that both Andy and I did that will last a very long time.
I've been talking to Peter Metcalf and Ish Hope about the Klan conference coming up in Sitka, March 29th or April 1st. What's the phone number people can call if they need more information?
Well, probably the best thing is the my email, because then I can channel anybody to get the questions answered or send them forms, and that's metcom@gci.net. And for Metcalf Communications, metcom@gci.net.
Anything you'd like to add, I might forget to ask?
Just hope we see you as we're a very positive, supportive environment, and it discusses the issues. It goes to the heart of Tlingit knowledge and their neighbors, Haida and Simshian, and other Northwest Coast neighbors are absolutely welcome. And just anyone who wants to, from beginners to tradition bearers, you know, we just hope to see really full rooms.
The basis of respect is showing interest. And I think no few places can you find out more about the Tlingit culture than at the Sharing Our Knowledge Klan Conference.
And Peter Nish, thank you for coming by the station today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 12th of January, 2012. It's the birthday of Haruki Murakami, born in Kyoto, Japan, 1949, who, when he was 3 years old, fell into a creek and was saved by his mother just before he was swept into a tunnel. He said, "I remember it very clearly, the coldness of the water and the darkness of the tunnel, the shape of that darkness. I think that's why I'm attracted to darkness." It's a scene that appears in his novel, The Wind-Up Bird Chronicle. The metaphor of a dark, dangerous underground appears in many of Murakami's books, including his latest, IQ 84. A woman sitting in a taxi in a traffic jam decides to take a secret staircase hidden on the bridge they're parked on, but the taxi driver warns her, once she goes down those stairs, nothing will ever be the same again. And he is right. As a teenager, Murakami read Kurt Vonnegut, Scott Fitzgerald, Truman Capote, Raymond Chandler, Raymond Carver, so that when he wrote his own novel in his late 20s, he wrote the beginning in English, then translated it back into Japanese. He's since translated the complete works of Raymond Carver into Japanese. Murakami's books, with many references to American pop culture, McDonald's, and jazz. And it was at a baseball game that Murakami had a sudden epiphany that he could write a novel, and he began to write it that very night. His books, known for their magical realism, strange, unexpected, unexplainable things happen, but Haruki Murakami himself leads a very disciplined day-to-day life, wakes up sometimes as early as 2 a.m., writes for several hours, eats healthful food, trains for marathons, swims, shies away from publicity, goes to bed by 9 p.m. It's the birthday of the novelist David Mitchell, born in Southport, England, 1969, who lived in Japan when he wrote his novels Ghost Written and Number 9 Dream, both of which owe something to the writings of Murakami. His most recent novel, The Thousand Autumns of Jacob de Zoete, is set in Japan during the Edo period. Today, Mitchell, his wife, and two children live in Ireland. Being a parent, he says, is a disruption in your writing life, but it more than makes up for it in the privilege of being able to witness the formation of a personality. What a useful phenomenon for any novelist, he says. We are shameless parasites. David Mitchell, who says, everything you need to learn about writing, you will learn and can only learn by writing. So get rid of the TV and work, and when you're stuck, write why you're stuck with merciless honesty, and you will become unstuck. Here's a poem for today by Kenneth Koch from a longer poem, To Marina. Let's take a walk into the world, where if our shoes get white with snow, is it snow, Marina, is it snow or light? Let's take a walk. Every detail is everything in its place, Aristotle. Literature is a cup, and we are the malted. The time is a glass. A June bug comes, and a carpenter spits on a plane. The flowers ruffle earrings. I am so dumb-looking, and you are so beautiful. By Kenneth Koch, from the Collected Poems of Kenneth Koch, published by Alfred A. Knopf, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter, be well. Do good work and keep in touch.
The Juno Symphony presents Dr. Noise Goes Bananas. Award-winning kids musician Dr. Noise joins the Juno Symphony for a special family concert Friday, January 20th at 6 p.m. at the JDHS Auditorium. You won't want to miss this zany introduction to the world of the symphony, hosted by Dr. Noise and Maestro Pickett. Sponsored by ExxonMobil, admission to this concert is pay as you can. Check out junosymphony.org for more information.
Time is 3:33 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. The Alaska Commercial Fishermen's Memorial in Juneau announces that applications for engraving the names of commercial fishermen and women on the Fishermen's Memorial are now available. You may pick up an application in the Harbor Master's office next to Aurora Harbor or the Harbor Master's website at www.juno.org/harbors. For more information, you can call Bruce Bywalk at 463-5566. Next Monday is Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Here to talk about an event going on Sunday is Sherry Patterson. Sherry, thank you for coming down to the station today.
Thank you so much, Jeff, for inviting me.
So this is an event going on Sunday instead of the holiday on
Monday. Yes, we're celebrating here in Juneau on Sunday, January 15th at 2:30 p.m. at UAS Egan Lecture Hall.
I'm going to get philosophical. What to you is Dr. King's latest greatest legacy?
I believe that his greatest legacy was conveying and articulating the dream and the vision that he had, and his whole life was lived following that vision and that dream, and he lived and died because of it, and I believe that's his greatest legacy.
Why should all Americans join in celebration?
Because of that legacy, and because here in Juneau, you have we have a great program lined up, and just come out and be a part of it and celebrate with us.
Want to tell me about Sunday's event?
Yes. Our theme for this year is striving to go higher, focusing on the importance of education. And we have John Pugh, the chancellor at UAS, is going to come and greet us and say some wonderful things. And then we have Dr. Jesse Grant, who is the dean of students at UAS. He's going to be our keynote speaker. We have a 15-year-old, Nathaniel Sims, who is a sophomore and is also duly enrolled at UAS, living her dream. And we thought that was very interesting in light of our theme. So she's going to come and speak to us, and I'll be singing. And we have the Faith Community Choir, who will come and sing for us also.
And this all starts at what time on Sunday?
At 2:30 p.m. at the UAS Egan Lecture Hall.
Is there a cost to get in?
No, it's free to the general public. Everyone is invited to come. Bring the whole family.
Sherry, how long have you been singing?
I've been singing since, very young. In the choir in my hometown church, St. Peter Baptist Church. I would say six years old. Long time.
What good keeps you singing?
What keeps me singing? There's a song in my heart, Jeff. I have to sing. It's a gift that I've been given, and I'm anointed to do so, and so I can't be quiet. I have to sing.
And you'll be singing this Sunday starting at 2:30?
I will be. A few years ago, I did a piece on some of the songs from the Civil Rights Movement, and I'm going to be repeating that. Probably be just a little bit tweaked, but we'll be just telling a little story and inserting some songs as we go along.
And this all happens where again?
At UAS Egan Lecture Hall at 2:30 p.m. on this Sunday, January 15th. Right, everybody come.
Sherry Patterson, thank you so much for coming down to the station today. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgot to add?
I would. There are two other events that we were contacted about here in Juneau on the 16th, which is the holiday. The Alaska Bar Association is offering free legal services at the Diamond Court Building beginning at 11 a.m. on Monday morning through 7 p.m. And Saga is doing food drives throughout the city on Monday from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. And they'll be at Rainbow Foods, A&P, Safeway, Super Bear, and Walmart.
Sherry, thank you for coming down to the station.
Thank you so much, and we'll see everybody on Sunday afternoon. Thank you, Jeff.
3:40, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau. Last night, McPheeters saw the second of the second of two soap opera mudroom events happened in Juneau. There were seven storytellers, and one of them was Tom Cosgrove. He got this story, and I'd like to thank Mark Wheeler for recording it.
Tom Cosgrove is a full-time dad, part-time computer programmer, and an emerging storyteller. Tom escaped Chicago in a coat and tie over 20 years ago, and he's damn glad he did. He recently completed a three-month road trip across the U.S. with his family and was lucky enough to perform along the way. Tom will be performing his new show, A Nearly Normal Road Trip, on Saturday, March 10th at the Downtown Public Library at 7 p.m., a little plug. You can catch him at the UAS Sound and Motion Series, where he will be performing Friday, April 27th at the Egan Lecture Hall, also 7 p.m. Tom.
I got to lower this just a bit because, Linda, it was right in the middle of your forehead. I hate to tell you that. I'm 54 years old. I have two children, 11 and 13. You know, they're just at the point of wanting to stay up late, and I can't stay up past 9 o'clock. I don't have tattoos, I don't have piercings, and I can't tell the difference between Justin Bieber and Selena Gomez. Did I say that right? Okay. And I'm one of the few Americans left that do not have a Facebook page. I do have a website, nearlynormalalaska.com, but I'm told that's so 2006. I don't tweet, but I do text. But when I text, it's in full sentences, punctuation, capitalization, and none of those sideways smiley faces. And I am proud to admit that I read a newspaper every chance I get. Now, there are members of my family who accuse me of being over the hill, out of date, out of touch. Those are just labels. And I have spent a lifetime defying labels. My fifth grade teacher at St. Peter's Catholic School called my mother to tell her that I was an underachiever. But they still thought I'd make a great priest. Labels, they permeate our society. We all use them. And they've actually even become a grain of sand in the swimsuit of my marriage. You know relationships, give and take, her yin to my yang. And the thing is, you're smiling, dear. The thing is, Mila, my spouse, and I are complimentary. She's details, I'm big picture. And that is illustrated by this story, which she loves to tell. We were hiking out to the Boy Scout camp, out to the beach, and it was a warm, sunny spring day. And we were crossing Goose Tongue Flats. We were just not talking, just enjoying the day, when she stopped and turned. I have never seen so much goose poop. My response? What goose poop? There was, in fact, a huge amount of goose poop all over the ground. You know that special green, black, white Canadian goose poop? But I wasn't looking down. I was looking up. The Chilkat Mountains were white. You could see them. You could look all the way to Haines and White Caps out on Lynn Canal and the trees and the blue sky. Her yin to my yang. Now, what label causes us problems? Any label with expiration dates. And, of course, expiration dates are on everything now. Cans of beer with freshness dates? Come on. If you were really worried about fresh, you wouldn't be buying cheap beer. Mila believes that expiration dates are absolute. I consider them more of a suggestion. Now, I think Mila sees expiration dates as a product of an exhaustive scientific process. Me, I think they're a product of a committee. I, you know what? I'm sure they start with a date that's supplied by the woefully underfunded quality control lab. But then it goes to legal. Those lawyers think the scientists are a bunch of pinheads. They don't trust them, so they're going to move that date up a little bit. Then it goes to marketing. Now, these people, they're sharp. They've done all the research, right? They know that every week you move up that expiration date, you get a bump in sales. So guess what? That date gets moved up again. That's how expiration dates are set. So what that leaves is that is Mila and I standing in front of the refrigerator having this conversation. You going to throw that out? It's expired like a week ago. Oh, come on. It's not bad. Don't waste it. I don't want to take the risk. Come on, risk. And that's when she plays her trump card. Well, I've never had food poisoning. Okay, so I've had food poisoning a few times. It's not that big a deal. And really, food poisoning is really not that bad. I want to tell you that, you know, when these events occurred, it's because I was pushing the envelope of scientific inquiry. Now, I just want to tell you, food poisoning, it starts with dizziness. And if you're driving, you need to get off the road right away. And then there's waves of nausea, followed by projectile vomiting. And then guess what? It's basically over. Except for the tremors. Really, a bad hangover is worse than food poisoning. So don't let it stop you from pushing back. Because questioning authority begins at home. In your refrigerator. Now, Mila usually lets me win these little skirmishes at the refrigerator. As long as I promise not to feed the questioned item to the kids. But I've been tempted. Especially when they accuse me of being over the hill, outdated, out of touch. So there's something that I want them and you to understand. I know, because of hard-won experience, real experience out there in the trenches, that no matter what that label says, I know that there is a whole lot more life left. Thank you very much.
That was Tom Cosgrove, recorded last night by Mark Wheeler at one of the Mudroom events. The second one, they happen on the second Saturday, or the second Wednesday, I believe, of the month. If you need more information on that, you can check out their Facebook page. Just click on Mudrooms, and you'll find you're connected to them. Again, Tom Cosgrove. And thanks to Mark Wheeler for recording that.
Arts Up on K2 is supported in part by the Juno Artist Gallery, a cooperative featuring the work of over 25 local artists and artisans. The Juno Artist Gallery is open year-round, located downtown in the Senate Building.
Nancy DeTourney couldn't be here today, but she put in her stead John Kelly from KTOO TV. John, thank you for coming by today.
Okay, first off, for January 12th...
You got to sound a little bit more excited, John.
Well, I'm just, getting into it, I want to build up to a crescendo and then lead on, because there's a lot of things going on. Not as much as First Friday, but there's still quite a lot of things. The arts calendar, by the way, is available at jahc.org. And to start off, right before we get into any of the particulars, we have 34 entries for this year's Wearable Art Extravaganza, which is happening in February. The Wearable Art Extravaganza tickets are now on sale to members of the Arts Council. Stop by the JCC or call 586-2787 until 5 p.m. today, 9 to 5 tomorrow, Friday, and noon to 4 on Saturday to purchase tickets or to become a member. And special note, we only have 100 tickets for the Saturday night performance at this time. Tickets will be available online at Hearthside Books and at the JACC to non-members beginning Monday morning. So for those of you who are members or want to become members and get tickets ahead of time for this event happening in February, which is usually sold out, you may want to check that out today or tomorrow or Saturday. Music, theater, and the arts. One night stand at JACC TOE, Juno Arts Humanities Council Individual Artist Grand Recipient, Tony Newman will talk about his recent work, or his recent book, When Sarah Palin Came to Town. Join us for this free event and this opportunity to ask the artist about his project, 5:30 to 7 on Tuesday. The organ concert at the State Office Building Atrium is 12 to 1 tomorrow, Friday. Dan Hobson Classical Guitar at the Gold Room in the Baranoff Hotel, 127 North Franklin, at 7 p.m. Friday and Saturday. Juno Douglas City Museum, call for 12x12 community art installation pieces. More info and registration online on the museum website or call 586-3572. Films, the Telluride Mountain Film Festival at Centennial Hall will be 7 p.m. Saturday and at the Gold Town on Sunday at 2 and 4. Sounds like a lot of great stuff happening there, so you may not want to miss that for you who are into the outdoors. Workshop and classes, Juno International Folk Dancers, West Coast Swing Dance Classes, and the monthly ballroom dance, call 364-2334 for info. All day Saturday at the Jack. Sew a cuspuck at Rain Tree Quilting, 2213 Dunn Street, 789-7900, 10 to 5 on Saturday. Juno School District Tutor Training at the Bill Ray Center, 8 to 4 on Friday, 8 to 1 on Saturday. Let's Quilt, Bartlett Hospital Group Smoking Cessation Classes, Let's Quit. Cessation classes, 796-8920. There's a $75 fee for that, and that's happening 7 to 8 on Tuesdays through February 14th. So if one of your resolutions is giving up smoking, let's quit.
Or quilt.
Or quilt. GED orientation, quit and quilt. That would be a great one, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
GED orientation for all new students at the Learning Connection, 210 Ferry Way, 586. 5718, 10 a.m. on Wednesdays, business seminars by Alaska Litho Media Services. Learn how to maintain your own website with WordPress training, Centennial Hall, 1 to 4, Friday. Second Friday, teen hip-hop classes at the Canvas, 4 to 5 on Friday. Red Cross Disaster Services, an overview on the second floor conference room at 3225 Hospital Drive, 6 to 9:30 on Tuesday. Special events and fundraisers, MLK, Martin Luther King Day, free legal clinic at Diamond Courthouse, 12 to 1 on Monday.
It's 11 to 7, actually.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay, we do have some literary events I wanted to call attention to. The Juno Audubon Society, A Naturalist Summer on the Cruise Ship Disney Wonder, will be at the Egan Lecture Hall, room 112, tonight, 7 to 8:30. Focus Writing Group Downtown Library is free, meets weekly at 6 p.m. on Mondays. Write for Your Life. Or You Life, I'm not sure which one this is. Write for Your Life. Mendenhall Library, it's free, meets weekly, 10 a.m. on Wednesday. World Affairs Council, speaker Larry Pursley at the JCC, 5 to 6:30 next Thursday, the 19th of January. And I want to call special attention to the UAS Sound and Motion Series. Kyle Pickett will discuss And God Created Whales, which combines orchestra and whale songs at the Egan Lecture Hall, 7 p.m. on Friday, and not to get ahead of ourselves, but next weekend, the 21st and 22nd, the Juno Symphony, and you'll hear about it next week, obviously, but get those tickets ahead of time, Sound of Rivers and Seas, they're going to have a program with Hovhannes and God Created the Great Whales that Kyle is going to talk about. There's going to be Smetana's Moldau and Rachmaninoff's Piano Concerto No. 1. It sounds like a terrific night. I'm just letting you know ahead of time because it's a little over a week from now. It's Saturday the 21st and Sunday the 22nd. And let's see, we have some meetings. The community calendar meeting, JAHC invites community groups planning events, productions, fundraising activities, or any other important community activity to come to put their events on the community calendar for 2012-2013 at JACC, Monday, 2:30 to 5. Rotary, Tuesdays, noon at the Baranoff. Wednesdays, noon at Juneau International Airport. Thursdays, 7 a.m. at TK McGuire's at the Prospector. Juneau Chamber of Commerce, Thursdays, noon at the Moose Lodge, 8335 Airport Boulevard, 463-3488. Toastmasters meets Mondays, noon at the Federal Building, room 541. Tuesdays, 6:15 p.m. at St. Paul's Catholic Church Parish Hall on Loop Road. And also, this is their last weekend, it looks like, at the Alaska State Museum Boreal Birch Art and Science in the Northern Forest. Artist Constance Baltuck and A Klondike Tale by Avril Veliz at 397 Whittier. Note, this is the end. Closes after Saturday. So if you haven't gotten a chance to see those two exhibits, they're terrific. You don't want to miss them. And this is the last weekend to see it. Saturday's the last of that. So it looks like a busy weekend if you want to do something.
All right, John Kelly, thank you for going by. Let's hear a little bit about Kyle's presentation tomorrow night about whales.
The Spring Sound and Motion Art Series at the University of Alaska Southeast begins this Friday evening with a talk by Juneau Symphony Director Kyle Pickett. He'll discuss the upcoming concert and God Created Whales by Alan Hovhaness, the mix of orchestra and whale songs, and other similar techniques in 20th century orchestral music. Friday, January 13th, 7 p.m. at the UAS Egan Lecture Hall.
Time is 3:58, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ock Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. KRNM can be heard at digital channel 872, and KXLL can be found at 873. We're also live online at www.ktoo.org. Tomorrow at 3 o'clock on the Juneau afternoon, Pat Moore will be your host. We'll talk with Kyle Pickett about his Sound and Motion's presentation tomorrow night at UAS. We'll learn about our state ombudsman with Linda Lord-Jenkins. We'll meet this week's visiting speaker for the Juneau Shambhala Center. I'll also get a preview of Steve Lewis's Fireside Lecture at the Mininauk Leisure Visitor Center, all about Bald Eagle Movement. That Writer's Almanac Music and more tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. Weather forecast for tonight, rain and snow showers with up to 2 inches of snow expected, low temperatures around 30 degrees, southeast winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Forecast for Friday looks like snow showers are likely with accumulation of 1 to 2 inches expected, high temperatures around 31 degrees. Forecast for Friday night, mostly cloudy skies and colder weather with scattered snow showers. Saturday, mostly cloudy skies, locally windy weather with high temperatures around 22 degrees. Forecast for Monday night and Tuesday looks like mostly clear skies. It's going on through Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday as well on Monday. Coming up next is All Things Considered. Thank you for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon today, and have a great evening, and drive and walk carefully.